It's the News Roundup, where we discuss the region's top stories of the week. Joining us this week in studio here in Woods Hole, Brian Carroll, managing editor at the Mashpee Enterprise. Morning, Brian.
Morning, Mindy.
And on the phone, stuck in the snow off Cape, Ann Brennan, assistant managing editor for digital media at the Cape Cod Times. Morning, Ann.
Morning, Mindy and Brian.
It's, of course, mostly a rain event, some slushy snow here for us. But, Ann, what did you get, 8 to 10 inches where you are?
Yeah, well, I tried to make it down there, and the snow was pretty much up to my knees when I was digging out this morning.
Yeah, wow. And as we mentioned, kind of a mostly rain event here, lots of wind, some mixed sleet and snow. And joining us to bring us up to date on the weather, meteorologist Phil Burt from CapeCodWeather.net. Good morning, Phil.
Good morning, Mindy. How are you?
I'm good. So tell us, we've had these high tides that have created some erosion, which we're going to talk to Heather in a couple minutes about. But where are we at in the forecast now? This is almost over, right?
Yeah, I mean, we're kind of in the final stages here. The storm is several hundred miles offshore. It's sort of stalled out, but will slowly start to drift eastward and southeastward out to sea over the course of the day today. So the precipitation shield will gradually sort of pivot southward and away from the area, but it'll take its time. I don't think we'll really dry out until this evening. The one thing that I am still watching is I think the wind will actually come back up for a time this afternoon. So while they kind of sat down a little bit overnight, they're still gusting 35, 45 miles an hour. They may pick up for a time again around midday. But thankfully, that will coincide more with low tide as opposed to high tide.
Yeah, and of course, what's happening then is because of this duration of this storm, that's been the part of the problem here with pushing that water into us, right?
Yeah, basically, a lot of the times we get these coastal storms, they're much shorter, 18 to 24-hour event. It's the big ones in terms of coastal flooding are the ones that go on for multiple high tide cycles and or very extreme situations. Like with the blizzard, it wasn't a totally prolonged event. It went on for about 18, 24 hours, maybe 36, depending on how you want to count it. But the core of that storm was relatively short-lived, but the winds in that storm were very intense, and the high tides were astronomically high. So the blizzard back in February was a little different, but typically, you look at the blizzard of 78, you look at the perfect storm in 1991, you look at this storm, they tend to be the bad ones with respect to erosion and coastal flooding tend to be ones that go on for multiple high tide cycles. We're talking four or five tides, which is what we've dealt with this one, really, with Wednesday evenings being the first one where the water started to come up.
Yeah.
And then Thursday morning.
And I know for some folks who haven't been able to get home to Nantucket, who've been waiting, when are the boats going to run? I know the Vineyard, we've had trip-by-trip basis. So as we see this wind down, you say the winds are going to pick up again a little bit this afternoon. So the seas are probably going to remain a little bit rough for the rest of the day, right?
Yeah, I would imagine that seas won't come down really until tomorrow. And I think really even through tonight, the wind will be blowing pretty hard. But in terms of like the 50 to 60 mile per hour stuff, that should start to settle down this evening. Tomorrow, we'll still have gusty northeast winds and probably rather high seas, but, the sensible weather will seem much better than what it is today.
And the other side, and we've got a couple of nice days following that, right? Sun will come out.
By the time Sunday comes around, it'll be a distant memory.
All right. Phil Burt, thanks so much for joining us. Phil Burt from CapeCodWeather.net, who keeps an eye on the Cape forecast for us. Thanks, Phil.
Anytime. Thank you.
All right. And then, as we mentioned, this storm it really raised concerns about erosion. Our science editor, Heather Goldstone, has been out in Sandwich yesterday morning, high tide this morning. Hi, Heather.
Hi, Mindy.
All right. What did you find this morning?
Well, I found pretty much what we expected to see. Things were worse than yesterday, but not as bad as they were a month ago during the blizzard. We'd seen some forecasts that, as Phil was just mentioning, with this multiple tidal cycle, the storm surge starting Wednesday evening with almost a 2-foot storm surge at high tide on Wednesday evening, and these sustained north and northeast winds really pushing the water, particularly into Cape Cod Bay and kind of trapping it there so that it can't necessarily even drain at low tide. There were some concerns that we could see effects at high tide this morning, similar to what we saw during the blizzard a month ago. But, the winds did kind of slack off last night, as Phil mentioned, and although the storm surge, the buoys in Chatham and Nantucket are registering a 2.5 to 3-foot storm surge this morning as opposed to 2, 2.5 feet yesterday, that means several extra inches of water this morning, but not a foot or two extra of water this morning. At one point this morning, right around high tide, just as the tide was peaking, I was trying to get out on Salt Marsh Road. This is a road, for those who know it in Sandwich, that runs right behind the dunes, behind a row of houses, basically on the dunes with the marsh behind it. And as water was peaking, the water was coming up over the road rather quickly. I had to get out of there before I could even check on the beach much. But I did get a chance to talk, actually, with a member of the Cape Cod Times video team who said he'd been in that spot both yesterday and during the storm a month ago, and that things were definitely much worse than yesterday, but not as bad as they had been a month ago. And I think that's kind of the theme across the board, that conditions are definitely worse than yesterday. And because of this sustained storm, we're seeing a lot of erosion, but it's not as bad as it was a month ago.
Of course, the problem here is because we had that storm last month with the blizzard, and then we've had a couple of wind events, there's no time for the beaches to recover, right? So that's really the concern here, is you've already got some damage, and then you bring in another storm like this, and that's where we can run into problems.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even under the best of conditions, a month would be a short time for beaches to try to replenish themselves. You know, we saw a breach in Boston Beach in Truro that opened up last month, several breaches that opened up on Town Neck Beach in Sandwich, and those have been getting overwashed again, not, you know, reopened, but getting overwashed again during this storm, so adding to that coastal damage. And also there were a number of homes, particularly in Sandwich and along that Cape Cod Bay shoreline, that took damage last month. They haven't had a chance to really repair that yet, so to be hit again is really tough.
Yeah. All right. Heather Goldstone, a science editor. Thanks, Heather. Stay dry.
Pleasure.
And one of the things that we've saw, especially in Sandwich, we had the boardwalk that suffered a whole lot of damage in that last storm. Closed to the public, but you might not know that because many people are, I guess they're not ignoring it this morning because it was completely covered in water, but a lot of damage there and people kind of taking some chances walking out on that thing.
Yes, they are. But I just want to say really quick, we also had a team today this morning at the Chatham Fish Pier, and they said the waves were breaking over that North Beach section where there's those five cottages still remaining.
Yep.
So that's another thing to watch as this storm progresses, you know, pulls out. If we lost it during the blizzard, one of those houses did partially wash away. So yeah. Another thing to look at.
Yeah, of course, that Chatham Pier fishing, that parking lot there gets flooded sometimes, yeah, too. I imagine this morning it's kind of underwater a bit.
Underwater.
Yeah.
But back to the boardwalk, yes. During the blizzard, there was a lot of damage that you can't really see if you're looking at the, you know, there are boards that are missing from the boardwalk, but it's underneath the bridge structure and the walkway structure where there's been damage. I think there's some joists missing or support structure that was washed away, and there are fears that, you know, a heavy load across the boardwalk it may tumble down. They have been putting up tape and sawhorses to prevent people from going out there. And last weekend, a lot of the tape was cut, the sawhorses were thrown over, and people were using the boardwalk. So the town redoubled its efforts to nail the horses in place and put up more tape, caution tape, to block people from getting on. Of course, it's not clear with the storm, as you say, it's the boardwalk's been underwater. There's been, as Heather was saying, higher tides. So it's unclear what kind of damage there's going to be in addition to what was happening before.
And, of course, we've got damage. We'll be assessing this for a couple of days, I think.
Yeah, they're before this storm, they were saying that to fix the boardwalk would be about $650,000. Where that money's going to come from is unclear, according to George Dunham, the town administrator. But we'll see how much more damage there was done. I know, I remember a million years ago when I was covering Sandwich, that they had a big fundraising drive after the boardwalk, parts of it was washed away in the perfect storm, and I believe it was Hurricane Bob, where they rebuilt it using money from donations and people donated boards with their names on it or a saying on it. But we'll see whether that's a road that they're going to have to take this time or if there's other money available.
Yeah, for Sandwich, this has been, as you noted, Anne, this is a long-running issue, as with most towns, I guess, dealing with erosion. But Sandwich has been, you know, trying to get some attention from the state government and the Army Corps about the sort of plight of their dunes. And it's interesting, you know, you could look at this, you know, in adversity, there's opportunity. The TV trucks from Boston Media were down in Sandwich covering it, and I think it even got a mention on the Today Show. So our Sandwich paper actually has a smart editorial this week kind of saying maybe there's a chance to kind of take advantage of the attention and maybe improve their odds for getting some financial assistance from either Boston or Washington.
Yeah. Well, and just following last month's blizzard, we had questions raised as to why emergency planners didn't open all six of the region's shelters. And they're looking back on that and saying maybe that's something they should have done and will probably do in the future.
Right. There was a meeting this week of regional emergency planners, and they felt that they were caught off guard, saying that maybe we were lulled into a little bit of security, that because not that many people have been using the shelters in past storms, that we only opened three of the six that we generally open. And they're saying now that they're really going to plan ahead and look at the storm and how the storm is going to impact. If it's going to impact the entire Cape, then every shelter is going to be open. Mm-hmm. And if not, then they might pick specific regions. But it was a real issue during the blizzard where many more people needed shelter. The power was out in some cases for some people for a week. Mm-hmm. Sandwich High School was a shelter. The generator there broke down, so they had to move people to Falmouth. And also, at the problem is they didn't have enough volunteers to run these shelters. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're at this meeting, they said, we really have to work with the towns to create a core of volunteers who are going to be reliable when a situation like this happens.
Yeah.
There are volunteers during the blizzard who couldn't get to this or were worried about going out in the storm.
And getting stuck, yeah, exactly. News Roundup, we're talking with Anne Brennan, Assistant Managing Editor for Digital Media at the Cape Cod Times, and Brian Carroll, Managing Editor at the Mashpee Enterprise. Governor Patrick was on the Cape yesterday, Anne, and talking about water quality, also his transportation and education ideas.
Right. He addressed about 100 people at the Cape Cod Chamber of Commerce luncheon in Hyannis, and he wanted to talk infrastructure, and I think he was thinking roads. And the people in the audience, the Cape Codders, wanted to talk wastewater treatment type of infrastructure. And he did take some questions about that. People were saying, you know, it's the Cape sends over $750 million in taxes to the state each year. It goes into the state coffers. And conversely, the region gets about $33 million back. And they're asking him, you know, that maybe the Cape, with the wastewater issues that it's facing right now and pressure to meet federal clean water standards, it could cost $4 to $7 billion to get that wastewater infrastructure in place. There was a, Patrick did say that maybe some of this revenue from his tax plan, which is what he actually came to push, his raising revenue in his tax plan, some of that money could go to the wastewater treatment, mm-hmm. construction or management that's needed down here on the Cape.
Yeah, one of the things I thought was funny was, you know, as everyone's mentioning the wastewater issue in his opening, he says, thank you very much for the warm introduction and the standard list of non-negotiable demands. I guess that when you have the governor's ear, you got to get your point across,
yeah,
right?
I think take advantage of that.
And that is made, you know, a lot of people raise their eyebrows. He wants to decrease the sales tax from 6.25% to 4.5%, and increase the income tax from 5.25% to 6.25%, and in some cases double the personal exemptions for people making over a certain amount of money. And he hopes to use that money to improve infrastructure around the state. The Big Dig legacy has taken a lot mm-hmm. of money away from repairing roads and bridges, and there's, you know, documented need that in those areas. He also wants to put money towards more money towards education, and but didn't seem to be totally unwilling to address the wastewater issues.
Well, Brian, we have a new report. Senate candidate Ed Markey has filed a bill, I should say, to help the Mashpee Wampanoag Tribe's land plans. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so this is Ed Markey, longtime representative and now Senate candidate running to fill the seat recently vacated by John Kerry when he was appointed to Secretary of State. And it's legislation I think you guys have covered before on the show and we've written a lot about in the paper and that the Mashpee Tribe has been lobbying for years now. It has to do with a 2009 Supreme Court decision in the Carcieri versus Salazar case. And basically the Supreme Court said that the BIA, the Bureau of Indian Affairs, could not take land into trust or create reservations for tribes that were not under federal jurisdiction in 1934. The Mashpee Tribe has been arguing that they actually qualify, but clearly the decision made things a lot more difficult for them. So Markey has filed a bill to kind of respond to the Supreme Court's decision and kind of clear the path for tribes like the Mashpee Wampanoag to create a reservation. And I think what's most interesting about this points to the tribe's clout down in Washington. You know, Markey is the ranking Democrat on the powerful House Natural Resources Committee, and I think you have to say he's the favorite to win the Senate seat, and he's the lead sponsor of a bill that, you know, has some kind of social and historical justice aspects to it, but practically, you know, would really only benefit, at least in Massachusetts, the Mashpee Tribe. Mm-hmm. So it's a read on them, I think.
Yeah. Of course, and as we've talked about many times, this is a huge, hurdle that the tribe has to get over. Without that land into trust, no casino.
Right, and you know, recently the BIA has approved it hasn't totally approved the plan, but kind of gave the go ahead for mm-hmm. the land into trust for the property in Taunton and Mashpee, 170 acres. But the Taunton property is where they want to build their casino. The worry is, I think, among members of the tribe and other people, is that if the BIA just moves ahead and approves the land into trust request petition, that there would be lawsuits.
Right.
If the Congress then fixes the Carcieri area and makes it more clear that the government is allowed to do this, that would prevent these lawsuits from happening. And, of course, without the land, or the quote-unquote reservation land, the Wampanoags can't build their casino. So it's one of the hurdles they're trying to jump in order to construct their casino.
Right. Well, hundreds of civilian employees at the Mass Military Reservation are preparing for unpaid furloughs.
Right. They're saying about 300 people who work at the Massachusetts National Guard Camp Edwards and Otis Air National Guard Base could be affected by the sequester or the automatic budget cuts to the federal, you know, as part of the lack of agreement between the Congress and the White House about how, you know, the budget. And these people are facing like a 20% cut in pay. There's 22 furlough days that they have to probably take if something isn't fixed. Between those days off will have to happen in April, because they needed 30 days notice, so the notice was given to these employees, and this should last through the end of the fiscal year in September. So it's for people who have these jobs, it's going to be, as one person said, a lifestyle change on trying to absorb this.
Yeah.
And these people, the contractors out at the base aren't going to be affected. So anything like the water cleanup that's going on, that those types of things that are under contract, they've already been funded for the year, mm-hmm. and they're not going to be impacted. But the people who are civilian employees of the National Guard, those people will be affected. And, you know, they do a lot of things, support jobs around mm-hmm. the base.
Yeah, I think, it's sort of one example of a bunch where organizations across the Cape are kind of trying to untangle what the federal budget cuts will mean to them. We had a story in today's paper about the Community Health Center of Cape Cod and Duffy Health Center in Hyannis, and both of them are looking at losing federal grants. And the Mashpee Tribe also is a major recipient of federal aid. We don't have recent figures, but in 2011, they received $4.7 million in federal funding, and a bunch of the programs, including their health care and the Gaming Commission, both are sort of on the list of federal agencies to see decreases in funding.
Yeah, that's the thing, as you're saying, kind of untangle. We're still trying to figure out what these budget cuts means in a lot of areas that's still not quite clear.
Yeah. Down in Woods Hole as well, Hui and
yeah. Yeah, so I guess as the coming weeks and months come, we'll find out exactly what that impact is. Well, there's a new report, Brian, that says that regionalizing the MMR would save the military millions.
Yes. So this is a report written by some engineering consultants for the Air Force, which owns the wastewater treatment plant on the military base, sort of in the southeastern corner, kind of cut between Sandwich and Mashpee and close to Falmouth as well, and the Massachusetts Air National Guard, which operates the plant. And the study was meant to look at some different options for the military in an effort to increase efficiency and save some money. You know, basically, what could they do differently to save some money? And the answer is, it seems to be, it's by tying in surrounding towns to take advantage of economies of scale and also use the full capacity of the plant and the disposal beds, which are over by the canal. So the military has solicited the towns to get a sense of their interest, and all four towns around it, Bourne, Sandwich, Mashpee, and Falmouth, have all said that they would consider tying into either the whole plant or the just the disposal beds. And this is significant because, you know, all these towns are looking at wastewater and looking at big bills for wastewater. And, you know, this is something that could really change the game, especially for Sandwich and Mashpee, who are closer to the plant.
It's interesting because, you know, we talk a little bit about regionalization on a bigger level, countywide in Barnstable, on different things. And it's interesting how, you know, that word's been around for a while and people kind of went, no. But then as the economy got a little bit worse and worse, people are going, you know, maybe it's not such a bad idea. So we're looking at that across the scale in a lot of different areas.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah.
Well, in this case, it looks, according to the report, it looks like if towns did tie in, that it would help the base by generating an increased income of $26.3 million as opposed to $12.2 million in terms of the value of what's happening at the wastewater plant.
Yeah, that's a lot of money.
So I should say this is the ball is sort of now in the military's court. They have this report which lays out a bunch of different options, and it ranks the regional option as the most attractive, both financially and on several other measures, including environmentally. But the towns are sort of now waiting for the military to come back and either say, yes, we're interested, you know, send us some more detailed proposals, or you know, possibly no, we want to go ahead.
Right. Well, Anne, we have a bit of a controversy in Truro over the summer beach stickers.
Right. This is kind of a bureaucratic kind of tango, I guess, in the sense that the beach sticker design for Truro, which for the next coming year, was designed by a Cape Cod Tech student, graphic arts student, and it has a shark with a smile on his face. And the director of the town's recreation and beach department didn't really like that because she feels like it gives the impression that the town isn't taking sharks seriously, especially since they only attack, you know, in the last few years since 1936, I guess, was in the town of Truro on Ballston Beach late July.
Yeah.
And they also have a committee, a beach commission, which has merged with, I guess, the beach department and the town's recreation department merged, and the beach commission, which used to run the beach department, is saying that they think that there's nothing wrong with this sticker, that they really like the sticker, and by the way, we're the ones who set policy, and you're the ones who set, the town people are the ones who make print the beach sticker. So there has been, it hasn't been decided yet whether they're going to move forward with the sticker, but, you know, there are concerns on the part of people, like I said, the director of the Recreation Department, worrying about this. And then they've also asked this task force that came together to look at, it's a multi-town task force, actually state people involved as well, to look at how to address the shark safety, the shark issue, and make it more safe. And they're asking them, what do you think of this beach sticker? At this point, a few people have commented, but not as a group. So we'll see what happens.
Well, of course, everybody's trying to cashing in on the visits by the sharks. You know, we've had all kinds of, you know, shark souvenirs and things like that show up. My thought is, if we're going to have a shark, why not it be a friendly looking shark?
Right.
Much better than like a man, like the teeth growling or whatever. Yeah, yeah.
Well, don't walk into the Cape Cod Chamber of Commerce office and mention shark. I know that there's, you know, in all seriousness, there are people who are worried about what the economic impact this is going to have on Cape Cod, as, you know, if the shark population continues to proliferate in the summer months.
Yeah. Well, you know, it'll be interesting because, you know, we have our shark expert, Greg Skomel, who's been tagging and following these sharks. And there's a great website, I wish I could tell you what it is right now, where you can follow. And maybe if you Google it, you can find it. But, I mean, we're learning a lot about these creatures that we didn't know so much about. We still don't know so much about. Who knows how many sharks have been around here? And we just didn't realize they were here, you know? I mean, so I don't know.
Food source, the seals are now so close, the sharks are coming to dying.
Yep. And we'll probably see more.
Watch going to that website and seeing where, you know, how far some of these sharks who have been tagged off Cape Cod, go back down to Florida, have come back just since the summer.
Yeah, it's fascinating to follow them. Just real quick, we only have about 30 seconds. We have another local singer, sort of, kind of, making her way to on American Idol.
Right. Angela Miller moves on American Idol. She lived in Falmouth for her early life, leaving in about eighth grade, and she has made the top 10, singing with her song Beyonce's I Was Here.
Yeah. That girl can sing.
Yes.
Yeah.
She wrote one of the songs herself, you know, which you don't see that often.
Yeah, that's the one I went on YouTube and saw. And she's very talented, but I don't know what she's up against. I guess I'll have to tune in and see what kind of competition she has.
Right.
All right. Ann Brennan, Assistant Managing Editor for Digital Media at the Cape Cod Times. Thanks, Ann.
Thanks, Mindy.
Brian Carroll, Managing Editor at the Mashpee Enterprise. Thank you, Brian.
Thanks, Mindy.
Also, thanks to our science editor, Heather Goldstone, and meteorologist Phil Burt from CapeCodWeather.net. I'm Mindy Todd. Thank you for listening.
The Point airs weekdays at 9:30 a.m. and 7:30 p.m. We're also on Facebook at The Point, WCAI. Amy Vince produces The Point. Mindy Todd is executive producer. Production assistance from Jenny Junker. Music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter. The Point is a production of the Cape and Islands NPR stations, a service of WGBH.